catches of an arcade addict podcast, an introspective look at video gaming from the classic era to the modern day. Now here is your host, Brian.
Hey folks, what's going on out there? Arcade Addict Brian here, and you are listening to episode 73 of the Confessions of an Arcade Addict podcast. Okay, a lot has gone down, kind of, sort of, since I recorded episode 72 back in February. Just the way work and other things have been unfolding over the last month or so, I haven't had the time or the energy to record this episode. So for that, I apologize. I'll see about the next time I stream, because I am streaming live on Twitch as we speak. Arcade Addict Brian, of course. I'll probably look into streaming probably maybe Thursday or Friday, depending on if I've got the energy to do it. You know, full disclosure, in another slog at my job. I have to basically work 19 days in a row, and I'm on day number 7. So, you know, no promises. I'll do my best, of course, but I'm not promising anything. You know, we'll see. If I'm okay come the end of the week, yeah, once I get my son to bed, I'll fire up the mics and we'll get it going. I'll turn right around and record episode 74. And I think probably early next week I'll edit this episode and, of course, put it out in the usual places. I did get the... Oh, goodness, what was that? Oh, that's right. I got the podcast on iHeart Media, so you can listen to the show there now, as well as at Spotify for podcasters on Spotify, Amazon Podcasts, Stitcher, Google, iTunes, of course, all the usual spots you can listen to this podcast. So just one more outlet for it, and hopefully another place for people to find it and hopefully listen and enjoy it. Let's see. So, yeah, aside from that, the only things of note worth mentioning are my quest for getting my all-time high score on Tempest continues, and I'm actually making progress. I actually topped 400,000 this Saturday past at the arcade. I'm very proud of that. And then I played a game of Frenzy just before I started my shift, you know, just to play something, and I was able to get on the top 5 score board there as well with a score of 44,000 points, which is not easy to do, mind you, you know, with the scoring setup that Frenzy has. I mean, it's better than Berserk is, but still, you're earning every point you get, pretty much. Aside from that, not too much else going on. I did hear from my manager. I actually saw him on this Sunday past when I went to go get my pay. He was covering a shift for one of my coworkers. We got to talking, and he told me some things about, you know, the status of what's going on with the arcade and whatnot. And we were talking about things, and hopefully things are going to go in a more positive direction. That's all I can say about it, really. We're going to probably talk to the owner about rotating out some old school games, get a couple of games in there that people have been asking about. You know, we are a little bit bereft of fighting games, and people have been asking for, you know, the usual suspects, Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, that kind of stuff. I know that we have a Street Fighter machine because we had a Rainbow hack in the arcade, I want to say about a year before I became an employee there. Of course, I played it once, found out what it was, and I was just disgusted, never touched the machine again. You know, I mean, just put like a champion machine in there, maybe, you know, one of the other Street Fighters, one or two Mortal Kombats, and I think people will be fairly happy. So, you know, we're working on that. Anyway, so with all that done, as far as, you know, status reports with me, I checked emails and, you know, voicemails, and nothing is out there. So once again, if you're a listener to the show, or you're a new listener and you have, you know, questions, thoughts, comments, things of that nature, you're curious about, you know, anything I've spoken about in the last 72 episodes, hey, get a hold of me, arcadeaddictbrian@gmail.com. Also, there is a phone number for voicemails. That phone number is area code 734-623-0832. Sorry, folks, I'm a little rusty at this. And, of course, I'm on the all the social media platforms that I choose to be on. Facebook, Instagram, X, Tumblr, Blue Sky, Threads, and a couple of others that I can't remember off the top of my head. Like I said, I'm a little rusty. But if you want to get a hold of me through those outlets, all my links are in one place now. That is at Linktree. And the address is linktr.ee/arcadeaddictbrian. All of the ways to get a hold of me are there. And you can pick any one of them. I'm fairly active on both Facebook and Instagram the most. I am on Tumblr. You know, I check Threads and Blue Sky and X every once in a while when the toxicity is, you know, not messing with me. And of course, I'm streaming, as you know, on Twitch as of right now. So you go to twitch.tv/arcadeaddictbrian. That'll get you right to my streaming page. And I usually stream in the later hours because more often than not, I'm working. Most of my jobs have me at work until 10 o'clock at least. So if I'm going to stream that night, usually I get on about an hour afterwards. I stream a bunch of different things, even though I've been on a major Division II kick as of late. I stream old school video games that I have in emulation. I stream games I have on Steam and things of that nature. I do have like a schedule of games that I actually created that I think I need to follow. But yeah, getting back into some of these games is a little time consuming, so I guess it's something I have to do off camera, I guess. So anyway, that's all there for you, and let's get on with this show. I've got quite a bit to talk about and not a lot of time to do it, so let's get right on to it. Story time.
Bodies are given life in the midst of nothingness. Existing where there is nothing is the meaning of the phrase, form is emptiness. That all things are provided for by nothingness is the meaning of the phrase, emptiness is form. One should not think that these are two separate things.
Okay, story time. Christmas of 1987. Okay, the year before, 1986 was not a good year for yours truly. My older brother lost his life as a result of a stupid fight in the springtime, and the entire year was bad for the family, but somehow we made it through. You know, we kind of pulled together and we kind of helped each other along. The following year, 1987, was a little bit better in that we all started to rebound. We had our yearly family reunion in Connecticut that year, and I have memories of hauling my brother's stereo that I inherited to the hotel ballroom and playing DJ for the Saturday night get-together. You know, that was kind of fun, at least until the amount of requests started to overwhelm me anyway. My best friend Rob and I were hanging out a lot at this point, as well as I was hanging out with my buddy Edgar. They both had Commodore 64s, as well as my friend Mark. I wanted my own system, so I started asking my mother for one in the summer. By late summer of 87, I was also working at CVS, thanks to my man Rob hooking me up, and I would stay at that job until the spring of 89. I had wanted a Commodore 64 since 1982 when I saw them appear in department stores as demos, and also seeing my friend Mark had one, and then the following year after 1983 when I met my best friend Rob at school, and I started hanging out at his house, he got one for Christmas that year. I had started collecting Compute Magazine that year, and I think my aunt bought me a subscription to that magazine, if I'm not mistaken. And once I had gotten that, and I'd seen, like, you know, the various peripherals for the Commodore, and, you know, all the other things, of course, the software and the games and everything like that, I started hounding my mother for one. And that pretty much... went through until Christmas of 87. I had some experience on D-Dial, which was a local online chat system. I've talked about that several times. I've made a lot of friends through that system. That was a lot of fun back in the day. When I started hanging out at my buddy Rob's place after Christmas, I started, you know, playing games on the 64. He started getting games a few at a time, if I'm not mistaken. The first game, oh goodness, I can't remember the name of that game, but it was, you know, the 64 experts out there know what game I'm talking about. It was basically like a game in the woods. You were attacked by spiders and different things like that. But the game that we really all bonded over was Fantasy, because that was more like Dungeons and Dragons. And we started, you know, making adventuring parties of our own with different saves and things like that. That was really cool. My buddy Edgar got one from his father for in 1985. Rob and Ed started trading games, and 85 was the year when all of us, along with our friend Dave, our mutual friend Dave, who was the lone Apple holdout among us all, we'd all go over to Rob's or Ed's house, and we would play games like Summer Games, Elite, Fantasy, like I said, Pit Stop, which was a fun game because that was actually a split-screen two-player game, and games like that when we weren't going over to Dave's to play his games. Those were the days, let me tell you. Between hanging out with Mark every weekend, going to the mall and the arcades when I could, even though, you know, in this time from like 82, like right up until 87, you know, this is what I was doing. This is how I spent most of my free time when I wasn't going to school, or, you know, as in the case of like late 87 when I wasn't working, you know, this is what I was doing. I was hanging out with my friends and, you know, things were good. I couldn't have been happier at the time. But as the years went on, I was starting to really get tired of always waiting on other people's good graces to, you know, play games on their computer. By the fall of 87, my mother asked me what I wanted for Christmas, and without hesitation, I asked for the moon. Like I said, I had just started a new job in the fall, and I was still learning how to be a professional when it came to working, especially in retail. But my family was much happier that I was working, especially my grandfather, since I had quit high school in, like, the, what, late winter of 85, if I'm not mistaken. I had had two jobs before the one at CVS that I had had for 2 years. I didn't stick with either one for very long because, you know, I just wasn't... I may have been, in 1985, I may have been 16 years old, but I was not very mature for even being 16 years old. Let's just put it that way. But for Christmas, my mother got me a Commodore 64C with two FSD1 disk drives. They had metal enclosures, so they ran cooler and slightly faster than 1541s. And most importantly, a 300 baud modem. Once I got that, I started going on to the local BBSs and going on to D-Dial, you know, and talking with everybody and so forth and so on. On top of that, She also bought me a VCR and a 13-inch color TV as well. So, yeah, I was in heaven. I could not have been happier at that point. I mean, I could play games on my 64, and I had started making connections to people who had games, and I would also buy games as well. I could watch TV or movies as I wanted to. I mean, this is when I first started recording Star Trek The Next Generation, if I'm not mistaken. I had to wait until I think the season started over in the summertime in reruns to catch, like, the first, like, what? Oh, goodness, I want to say, like, 8 or 9 episodes of the first season. So, yeah, I mean, I was really happy. Then I went to a local video store, the one that had video games and pinball machines in them. I started renting movies from there. You know, most of the time, you know, classic wuxia martial arts flicks and sci-fi movies. The mall had an electronics boutique, and they would also get a Babbage's later on. I think they got the Babbage's in like 88 or something like that, maybe even 89. So now I had places to buy my own games. So yeah, Christmas 87, I was 19 years old, and yeah, life was like, I was floating on cloud nine. I could not be happier, you know. In some ways, that short happiness would be short-lived because the upcoming year, 1988, was when arcades started shutting down in my area one after the other, but that's another story for another day. So, that's story time. A little status report as to how things were back in, like, the early to mid-80s and going into the late 80s and so forth. So, yeah. All right. With that done and out of the way, let's get right on to Are You Experienced?
I'm too old for this. Hiding in front seats like a teenager.
Harvey, I think I'm getting too old for this stuff.
I'm getting too old for this.
Listen, you was born too old for this.
I'm getting too old for this.
You're getting too old for this. Lying wet-arsed in the heather chasing other men's cattle.
I'm getting too old for this sort of thing.
Maybe you're getting too old for this. What do you think, huh?
I'm not too old for this shit. I'm not too old for this shit. You will not. We're not too old for this shit.
No, we're not too old for this shit.
We're not too old for this.
Say it like you believe.
We're not too old.
Are You Experienced? Mega Mania for the Atari 2600. I first started getting this game at Video Connection. And, you know, this is one of my favorite Activision games. And also one of my favorites for the Atari 2600. It's just a lot of fun. But let's go right ahead over to Wikipedia. And let's see what kind of information they've got. Mega Mania is a video game developed by Steve Cartwright and published by Activision in 1982. The game is a fixed shooter where a pilot of an intergalactic space cruiser who, after eating a variety of food, has a nightmare where his ship is being attacked by food and household objects. Using the missile launcher from his space cruiser, he finds himself attacked by various food items and household objects. Cartwright initially found inspiration for Mega Mania's gameplay from the arcade game Astro Blaster, which was released in arcades in 1981. After completing a variation of the game, the team at Activision felt it should be taken on a different form to separate itself from the various space shooter games on the market, eventually leading to Activision's ad agency developing the food-induced nightmare theme. The game took 9 months for Cartwright to develop. Initial response to Mega Mania had its critics split, with early reviews complimenting the graphics and varied movement of the enemies, while others felt it was another game in an already oversaturated field of games influenced by Space Invaders. Well, it was 1982. The games, at least the way I look at it, games didn't really start going away from the Space Invaders theme until that year, really. I mean, the most popular game of the genre, aside from Space Invaders, is Galaga, and that's a Space Invaders clone, in a way, even though it plays game differently. But I digress. Let's see. The game would receive the Most Humorous Arcade Game at the 4th Annual Arcade Awards, while Video and Computer Gaming Illustrated declared Mega Mania as the best Atari 2600 game. The game was released for the Atari 5200 and Atari 8-bit systems, as well as various compilation titles. Alright, let's move on to the gameplay. In Mega Mania, the player is a pilot of an intergalactic space cruiser, as was said before. It can be played with only one player, with two players taking turns. The goal of Mega Mania is to accumulate points by knocking out as many enemy objects as possible by firing their missile launcher at them before the player's own fleet of three space cruisers are destroyed. The player can earn an extra space cruiser in reserve for every 10,000 points earned. There are 8 waves of enemies which move with different frequency and attack patterns. Each level has the point value of each object increase until the space dice level, which is level 8, after which all enemies are worth 90 points each and the enemy's palette, color, and patterns change. The game is timed by an energy bar at the bottom of the screen that gradually depletes during each wave. If it runs out, the player loses a blaster. Bonus points are rewarded for each round for how much energy is left in the bar. And I will go so far as to say that also goes up by 10 points all the way up to level 9 when it's 90 points per tick of the energy bar. And that actually, well, I'll get into it Time for Some Strategy. I'm getting ahead of myself. Okay. Using the game options on the Atari console, the player can choose between guided missiles or straight missiles. With guided missiles, the missiles can be steered by following your joystick's movement. With straight missiles, they streak straight up. Okay, let's go on to the development. Mega Mania was designed by Steve Cartwright for Activision. Prior to working at the company, Cartwright had gone to college with David Crane at the DeVry Institute of Technology in Phoenix. When Crane and Alan Miller created their own company, Activision, they found quick success, leading them to hire new employees, which included Crane's friend Cartwright. After being hired by Activision, Cartwright had to develop a game. Mega Mania was his second game released following Barnstorming, also released in 82. He recalled the influence to create the game after he had seen Astro Blaster at Chuck E. Cheese restaurant. Cartwright developed a ship similar to that of Astro Blaster. On designing the ship, he realized how simple the graphics had to be for the system, with 8 bits and one color for the ship. Developing for the Atari 2600 was difficult, with Cartwright stating that the code to define how the objects displayed was very complicated, noting that it required multiple objects moving horizontally, passing each other vertically, missiles passing vertically through rows of objects, which Cartwright explained as, quote, might seem like a trivial task using today's technology, actually took months of late-night coding to figure out, end quote. Mega Mania was coded to fit a 4-kilobyte ROM for its graphics code and sound. It took over 9 months to code. After completing code for the gameplay, Cartwright felt that the market was overloaded with outer space-themed shooter games, but were confident in the gameplay of Mega Mania and thought of ways to make it stand out in the marketplace. Some ideas were to title the game Space Game as an anti-marketing effort. Tom Lopez at Activision suggested the Gadzooks title, which led to Activision's ad agency unveiling its concept that the game was about a spaceship commander who had a nightmare after eating too much junk food, leading to enemy ships becoming objects like hamburgers, spinning dice, tires, and bow ties. After this, the game was then titled Mega Mania. Glenn Anderson adapted the game for the Atari 8-bit family line of computers. Okay, moving to the release. Mega Mania was released for the Atari 2600 on September 24, 1982. Electronic Games listed Mega Mania, along with Robot Tank, Enduro, River Raid, and Pitfall, as being among the biggest hits for Activision in 1983. Jim Levy did not include Mega Mania as being among Activision's games that had sold over 1 million in an interview in June 1984. Okay. Ports of the game were announced for consoles like the ColecoVision, Atari 5200, and computers such as the Commodore 64 and MSX. Mega Mania was released for the Atari 5200 in November of 1983. Game critic Luke Hudson reported that the Atari 5200 version of the game was not planned to be heavily promoted until after the Christmas season to keep it from competing with the Atari 2600, which is weird. The Atari 8-bit version was released in 1984. The ports add a title screen and more detailed enemies, plus the names of the enemies listed in the manual have changed. There are ice cream sandwiches instead of cookies, refrigerator magnets instead of bugs, and diamond rings instead of diamonds. Okay. Mega Mania was included in Activision Anthology for the PC, PlayStation 2, and Game Boy Advance, released in 2002. Activision Hits Remixed, released in 2006, was for the PlayStation Portable. A version of Mega Mania developed by the South American Development House, I'm going to take a shot at this name, Ivelgamus, I think it's pronounced, or Ivelgamus, and published by Activision, appeared on Arcade Zone for the Wii in 2009. Their version of the game features altered play control and new graphics. Okay. All right, the reception. As was said before, critical response to the game was split. Critics who enjoyed the game complimented the graphics and variation on the genre. In Joystick, an anonymous reviewer called it, quote, one of the most original variations of the bottom shooter concept ever created exclusively for home console, end quote. And that, quote, even the best Invaders players will find surprising new challenges, end quote. The reviewer gave the game high ratings for gameplay, longevity, and graphics. The video game update declared the game a, quote, dazzling and relentless action game, end quote, and praised the challenge and the sound effects. Bill Kunkel and Arnie Katz of Electronic Games described it as, quote, an example of Activision as at its whimsical best, end quote, and praised the varied gameplay, graphics, and sound effects, declaring that it was one of the most addicting games they had played in a long time, end quote. Lute Hudson, writing in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, gave the game a mixed review, finding it too derivative of Space Invaders and that the graphic and theme was better than the game itself, while describing it as, quote, Space Invaders with a vengeance, end quote, noting that the more complicated patterns and that enemies approach you in Mega Mania. Hudson concluded that, quote, it's a nightmare, all right, and in terms of color, detail, variety, and toughness, it's a very good nightmare. I just can't get all that excited over Space Invaders games anymore, end quote. Well, that sounds like a personal problem to me. Video Magazine reviewed the Atari 8-bit version in 1984, describing it as, quote, are hardly different, end quote, in terms of gameplay from the original Atari 2600 version, but emphasizing its visually enhanced graphics that allowed players to, quote, clearly distinguish what each wave of attacking objects is supposed to represent, end quote. Reviewing the Atari 8-bit computer version of the game, Computer Entertainer stated that it was even better than the Atari 2600 version of the game, noting challenging gameplay, fast-paced action, high-quality sound effects, and the graphic and humor. Graphics, it should say. But it said graphic. Specifically noting details like treads on the tire enemies as they spin. The review concluded, quote, the variations on the invasion game are many, but few have the graphic excellence and superb challenge of Mega Mania, end quote. Michael Blanchett gave a negative review of the Atari computer and 5200 versions of the game, writing that the game was not significantly better than the Atari 2600 version. While praising the graphics, Blanchett stated that the claims of the game being a parody of shoot-em-ups was weak, writing that, quote, at first the idea of fighting off hamburgers might solicit a nervous giggle or two, but any amusement quickly fades. Facades and hype aside, Mega Mania is just another shoot-em-up, end quote. The Atari 2600 version of Mega Mania received an award for Most Humorous Game at the 4th Annual Archie Awards, as was mentioned. The editors and writers of the magazine Video and Computer Gaming Illustrated listed Mega Mania as the best Atari 2600 game in March of 1984, specifically highlighting the game's various enemy designs, attack patterns, and sound effects. It was also the runner-up as the best game for consoles, only beaten by Centipede. I played Centipede for the 2600. I don't know about that one, but okay. To continue, from retrospective reviews, Computer and Video Games reviewed the game in 1989, stating the gameplay was slick and fast. Mega Mania remained a simple and addictive shoot-'em-up. Scott Allen Marriott of Allgame echoed earlier favorable reviews that what set Mega Mania apart was the variety of the patterns that the enemies had, and declared it, quote, one of the most enjoyable games in Activision's impressive library, end quote, for the Atari 2600. Brett Weiss, in his book The 100 Greatest Console Video Games 1977 to 1987, did not include the game in his top 100, finding that it did not rank up with other console games such as Space Invaders or Communist Mutants from Outer Space. Weiss described the Atari 5200 version as superior, as its graphics let you recognize the object you were shooting at. Okay. And finally, the legacy. Following the release of Mega Mania, Cartwright would continue to work at Activision, making games such as Plaque Attack, Frostbite, Hacker, Aliens the Computer Game. Also, like Mega Mania, his other games such as SeaQuest and Frostbite would have roots in arcade games such as Defender and Frogger. Yeah. Yeah, everybody says that Frostbite is pretty much a Frogger port, but okay. It's different enough. Side note, go listen to the Atari 2600 Game by Game podcast by Ferg. You can find that pretty much anywhere. He does a wonderful review of Frostbite. I mean, I'd never played Frostbite because the game didn't really interest me, but his review of the game certainly made me think twice about that. To continue, Cartwright would reuse the code for Mega Mania for Plaque Attack. He would later work on other series for other companies, such as the Less Manly series for Accolade and the PGA Tour for Electronic Arts. Cartwright later reflected on his Atari 2600 games in 2016, saying that, quote, many people consider Mega Mania, SeaQuest, and Frostbite to be the three best action games ever done for the Atari 2600. I would certainly never argue with that, end quote. Okay, and that is all of the information on Wikipedia about Mega Mania, so let's move on to my experiences with it. I rented out this game a lot from the Video Connection. I think until SeaQuest came out in the following year, this was my favorite Activision game, with the possible exception of Star Master. I knew it was a takeoff of Astro Fighter, but I didn't care, because this game had its own patterns and enemies. I'm proud to say that this game was the first one my son played when he was 5 years old. With him being autistic, sometimes the movement of the enemies would overstimulate him, but for a time he would ask to play video games with me, and I knew exactly what he meant. In a way, I miss those days. I still play this game in emulation, and it's a Stone Cold classic. This is another one of those games I am better at now than I was when I was 13 and neck deep in my video game addiction. And that's Are You Experienced? For Mega Mania. If you've got any thoughts, comments, questions about the game, you have, you know, your own stories about it, hey, hit me up, arcadeaddictbrian@gmail.com. Okay, with that done, let's move right on to time for some strategy. Time for some strategy. Let's see. The game starts off simply enough, but the patterns can mess with you. You have to study and memorize them and take a few risks along the way. In case of the enemies moving from right to left while descending, don't chase after them. What I mean by that is they move from right and from... Excuse me. I shouldn't say right to left. Left to right is what I should have said. Whoops. Oops. But yeah, when they move from right to left, they, you know, they're coming out in, especially like the first and third screens, if I'm not mistaken, they come out from the left side of the screen, they move to the right, and they're dropping bombs as they go. When I mean don't chase them, I mean don't move along with them trying to get shots in, because they will drop a bomb and they will kill you pretty easily. You know, I've had it happen more times than I care to admit, and I have to admonish myself about following them. Let's see. It's easier and better to try and time your shots as they fly by rather than move with them, because, like I said, the bombs they drop can kill you easily. Go against the grain. For the levels that have enemies descending from the top of the screen and moving from side to side, memorize the pattern and also keep in mind that at random times, the enemies will break the pattern and reverse it. The last level before they recycle and get harder is arguably the easiest. That's the dice level. Because you have asteroid-looking enemies descending, and the easiest thing to do is to shoot them and to try and line up the last ones to complete the level. After this, the enemies get faster and start moving in on diagonal lines of attack, and then the side-to-side enemies, they put on a burst of speed, the bombs they drop move faster, and so on. This is a genius game by Activision, and to me, it does not matter if they clone this game off of games like Astro Blaster and Astro Fighter. The phrase elegant in its simplicity best describes Mega Mania, and I still display this game in emulation. And that's how I feel about it. So, there you go. Full rundown for Mega Mania. The actual history of the game, my experiences with it, and tips and tricks on how to get better at it. So, if you've got your own tips and tricks, things like that, you know what to do. Hit me up. ArcadeAddictBrian@gmail.com. Okay, and actually, that's it. I thought this was a long show, and it's not. It's short, just three segments. So, okay, this will be pretty easy to edit and a fairly quick turnaround, and I think I'll be recording episode 74 later on this week. So I'm just going to go ahead and sign off here, because I've got a couple other things to do on stream before I go to bed tonight. So, okay, until next time, this is Brian saying have fun out there, good gaming, stay safe, au revoir.
You have been listening to the Confessions of an Arcade Addict podcast. All music has been provided by Kevin MacLeod. You can find his music at incompetech.com. You can contact the show by voicemail at area code 734-623-0832. You can also contact the show through voicemail at arcadeaddictbrian@gmail.com. And all links pertaining to the show can be found at Linktree. That's linktr.ee/arcadeaddictbrian. So until next time, you have been listening to the Confessions of an Arcade Addict podcast. See you then.